Morning. Today's daf nechulin is ches. We are on the very top of ches to madaf, the first words of the daf. And after spending the first week of the masechta talking about who can shecht, so the gemara is going to get a little bit more into the practicality of shechita, and that is specifically about the knife of shechita. We're going to be speaking today with specifics about the knife of shechita and some of the basic halachas regarding how to treat the knife when you shecht an animal. Vis-a-vis kashrus, vis-a-vis avodah zara, vis-a-vis tzaras. I know that sounds a little bit strange, but as the morning progresses, you'll understand how tzaras becomes part of the discussion. I'm Reb Zera Mishmul, so we start with the first halach of the morning, and that is libin sakin v'shachet ba'shchita sakshera. Chiduda kodem l'livuna. So the Gemara discusses the firing. Let's say you fire up the knife. Right? The expression in English goes like a hot knife through butter. So over here, so you fire up the knife, you heat up the knife, and you shech with that knife, is that going to be a good shechita, yes or no? Now, Reb Zera does not ask the question, he just simply gives it as a statement, meaning he has a very definitive opinion on the matter, and that is that the shechita would in fact be a good shechita. The assumption going into the statement is that, you have to cut the simanim, and you cannot burn the simanim. Cauterizing the simanim is simply unacceptable, but rather the only way shechita be done is through a cutting motion. In other words, you have to take a blade. Now, it doesn't have to be metal. We discussed that earlier. We'll discuss it again also. It doesn't have to be metal. It has to be something sharp, but it has to be a cutting motion, and it cannot be a burning act. So let's say you have now a burning hot knife, and the burning hot knife now is making its way through the simanim. So is that cutting or is that burning? So Rabbi Zera says, quoting Shmuel, very clearly, unequivocally, that's cutting. So why? Because even though, yes, it's true, the hot knife is going to do an act of burning, but that's only after the cutting. In other words, as the knife now, as the blade of the knife is making its way through, and the edge of the blade is making its way through, so first there's a cutting action, and then only afterwards is there going to be any kind of burning action. Now the Gemara says, but wait one second, there is going to be a burning action, meaning the sides of the knife are going to be burning as it's cutting through. And so what the Gemara now wonders is, wait one second, so as we're cutting, even as we're concluding the shechita, or we didn't even have to get that far, halfway through. So what's happening now is that we're cutting and we're burning. And now I understand that the cutting is happening before the burning, but there is burning also going on. So aren't we also burning the simanim as well? And so that's exactly the Gemara's next question. Vayikatz dadim. So the Gemara's answer is based on shechita mirvach ravach. So the Gemara says like this. Yes, it's true that if the simanim would just simply stay closed as the knife was going through, so then this problem would in fact be a very significant problem. But what the Gemara describes is that from a practical standpoint, as the knife is making its way through, the separation as the edge of the blade is making its way through, so the truth of the matter is that the simanim never get burnt by the sides of the knives as the knife is making its way through. Really interesting Tosfos over here. And Tosfos says on the top of the Amud Vayikatz Dadim Mashma Mikan Shima Shashchita Nikav Avesher Keneged Masha Shachet Trefa Da'achav Abayla Mesa Mishum Tzadim Ilav Mishum Demervach Ravach. So Tosfos says, very interesting. So basically, let's hear what the Gemara is saying right now. What the Gemara effectively is saying is that if while I'm doing the Shchita, there is a Nekev Beveshet, let's say there's a hole in the Veshet. Now we're going to learn later in the Masechta, as we get to the third parak of the Masechta, all the things that render the animal a trefa. So one of them is going to be nekuvas aveshes. Sorry, that was a little too Ashkenaz. Nekuvas aveshet. So if the esophagus gets a hole in it, so that renders the animal trefa. What we're discussing over here is the esophagus getting a hole in it after the blade already is making its way through. And it sounds very clear from the Gemara that too would render the animal a trefa, even though it's after the blade has made its way through. As long as the blade has not made it all the way through, and when we say all the way through, so we're going to learn a couple weeks from now. Wow. Doesn't have to be kol. It could be simply rove, but still the point's going to be the same. While the blade is making its way through, if the nekev happens at that point in time, so that also would render the animal trefa. The only reason why the Gemara over here is comfortable with the idea that the hot knife going through is not going to render the animal trefa is only because of mirvach ravach, because it expands and it widens as the knife is going through. Had it not been that, says Tosfos, clearly from the Gemara, the animal would be a trefa, even though it's during the shechita itself. Okay. Now, for the next almost amud of Gemara, So we're going to go away from Shechita and away from Halach Lamaisa, and we're going to go into the world of Tzaras. And whenever we enter into the world of Tzaras, so to all of us, right, myself included, it becomes extraordinarily abstract because we don't have Tzaras, we don't experience Tzaras. So this is none of it's Halach Lamaisa. So it's hard for us to really process all this. None of this is practical. We don't even see it. It's just the Gemara over here is spoken in an abstract fashion, and it's hard to see it in real practical terms. The basic idea of the Gemara goes as follows: is that when a person has Tzaras, or Tzaras can come in many different forms and formats. We're going to be discussing right now for this morning just two, and one is what's called a mikvah, and the other one is what's called shchin. Shchin will translate as an inflammation. A shchin is an inflammation where if a person gets whacked, so basically you get a black and blue mark. So that black and blue mark area, we'll call it a shchin. It's basically an inflammation. Yes, the skin is getting hot, but that's internal, it's not external. As opposed to a mikvah is a burn. A burn is when basically your skin comes into contact with fire or anything heated from fire. So under those circumstances, so now that is what falls under the category of mikvah. Shchin and mikvah, now it requires, there's many more details on this. And you can see Rashi, by the way, for a number of the details revolving this. I'm going to bypass a lot of it for this morning. Please forgive me. But I'll get to the basic idea of the Gemara. And because the truth of the matter is I want to spend the bulk of our morning talking about the Gemara after the Tzaras Sugya, which has to do a lot more with Halach Lamaisa. But the basic idea is as follows. Both an inflammation, a shchin, or a burn or a mikvah can result in Tzaras. Now, we know what the Halach is regarding Tzaras, that in order for a person to have Tzaras, he has to have a certain amount of area of the skin afflicted by this by this discoloration, and the area is what in halach is referred to as a gris. It's approximately the area of a penny, the surface area of a penny. And so, therefore, if your skin either has an inflammation or a burn, and again, by the way, I'm oversimplifying it because there has to be a white Tzaras spot on either the inflammation or on the burn. There has to be a hair. The hair has to be discolored. Sometimes the person is sequestered. We look to see if there's an expansion of the area or if the hair is there, tipping us off that this is Tzaras. Again, there are many details which I'm bypassing right now because I know what's coming up. I know the Gemara's basic question and the basic point the Gemara is going to be making, and that's what we're focusing on. So let's see all this inside. So if a person, let's say, gets you have a spit, a metal rod, and you heat it up, and vehikabo, and the person gets hit with it, and so now you're getting hit with both blunt force and also the burning hot metal. And so what does that fall under the category of? Is that going to be considered shchin? Is that basically an inflammation? Or is that going to be considered a burn? So mishum shchin nidon, mishum mechma nidon. L'may nafkamina, the Gemara says, now what difference does it make? L'chidatanya. So the Gemara sets us up now to understand and appreciate the nafkamina. So shchin u'mechma mitamim b'shavu achad, b'shnei simanim, b'seir lavan u'vivision. So as it relates to either shchin or mechva, so is mitamim b'shavu achad, you only get 1 week of being sequestered. Sometimes it's a 1 week process, sometimes it's a 2 week process. And so what the Mishnah and the Nagam is telling us is that when it comes to inflammation or burn, so it's a 1 week sequestering. So Bishnei Simanim and the litmus test to see whether or not it's real Tzaras or not is one of two things. Either Seir Lavan, the hair that is growing in the area that got afflicted is going to either turn white or Pisyon. Or what happens is that before you get sequestered, you basically take a pencil and you draw a circle around the area. And after a week, if the area expands, so now that will be your second siman in terms of knowing whether or not this is in fact true Tzaras. V'lama chilkan akasov. Now, if both of them basically behave the same way, if an inflammation and a burn both behave basically the same way with the same 1 week sequestering, and the same siman of either a white hair or expansion, so then why does the Torah give it two separate parshios? So the Mishnah goes on to explain, Lama Shema Sarfin Zem Zem. It means to say that they do not combine with one another. For a person to become a Mitzara, he must either have a full gris of either a Shechin or a full gris of either a Mechva, but half a gris of both of the two combined is insufficient to render the person a Mitzara. V'tayin, the Gemara quotes another brayse as well. Ezu shchin ve'ezu mechva. So laka be'etz be'evim benafas bechamit veriyah v'chol davar shalabah machmasa or. If let's say you got a hit, a strike, with either a piece of wood or stone, or some mineral, or chamit veriyah, anything that did not get that did not get heated up with fire. Lasu ye'evra mi'karo. Let's say it was lead. But lead that was dug up from the ground that does not have, that may be a little bit warm, but does not have any heat, heated by fire. So zeh shchin. So over there, so that kind of trauma, that kind of blunt force, so that's going to create inflammation that falls under the category of shchin. And ve'ezu mechva, and as far as the burn is concerned, nechva begachals beremetz, besid rosech, begafsis rosech, v'chol davar haba machmas ha'or. Anything that was heated up by fire, coals, or any of these items, right, the various forms of coals that are heated up with fire, lasui chamei ha'or, water that was heated up with fire as well, zui michva, so this falls under the category of michva. So if the person gets a burn with these items, and then again, sequestered for a week in either a white hair or expansion of the wound area, so in any of these cases, that falls under the category of michva. So basically now, in the world of tsaras, we have just learned two things. There are two different types of tsaras wounds as it relates to a burning. One is an inflammation, a shchin, and the other one is a burning, a mechva. V'tanya, on top of that, now we're going to quote another braisa. Shchin a mechva, em shchin kodom la mechva, bato mechva sa shchin. V'mechva kodem sa shchin, bato shchin sa mechva. So now, and one more rule that we have to go over so that we can all appreciate now the question being asked. Let's say you have an area on your skin that was both inflamed and burnt. So what status does it get? Does it get the shchin status or does it get the michva status? And the answer is very simple, says the Braisa. It's whichever comes last. So for example, if you have an area that first got hit, and so now then there's an inflammation in that area, and then after that, the same area now gets burnt with something that was heated by fire, so that categorically now falls under michva. Conversely, if something, the area first got burnt with something that got heated up by fire, and then it got hit and then inflamed, so then it's considered a shchin, not a mechva. Good. So now we got all the ground rules necessary to appreciate and understand the upcoming question. Now the Gemara wants to know, so let's say now you have on your skin already pre-existing a half of a gris of shchin. So in other words, so you have a half gris of an inflamed area. And now, right next to, contiguous to, the pre-existing half gris area of shchin, you get hit with a hot rod. So in other words, a rod that was heated up with fire. But in other words, it just doesn't touch you, you get hit with it. So how do we view getting hit with a hot rod? Do we say that first it's an inflammation followed then by the burn? Or do we say that first it's a burn followed then by the inflammation? Because as we just learned together, the ground rules is, whichever is second is what is going to define it. So my. So chavta kadim vasi havla mevata lechavta vavale shchin u'michve v'lo mitstarfin. So when getting hit with a hot poker, so do we say that first it's blunt trauma, then it's heat, so therefore it falls under the category of michva. So that means now that it's michva and shchin that is side by side, and as we learn together, that's not going to be mitztaref. Odilma havla kodem v'asi chavta mavata leila havla v'avle shchin v'shchin u'mitztaref. Or on the other hand, no, maybe getting hit with a hot poker, first it's the burn, then it's the trauma, it's the blunt trauma, it's the blunt force. So therefore, it falls now under the category of shchin and not mechva. And so therefore, what I have is shchin next to shchin, and therefore would be mitzarif. And so basically now, question is, when I'm getting hit with a hot poker, so do I first view it, do I first see the burn, then the blunt trauma? Or no, do we see first the blunt trauma and then the burn? So Tashma, the Gemara says, well, I now know the answer. Oddly enough, a question that has nothing to do with Shechita, but I know the answer based on the ruling of Rabbi Zera Amar Shmuel. Because Amar Rabbi Zera Amar Shmuel, Li Ben Tzak V'Shachar Bashchita Sukshera, because Chiduda Kodin L'Livuna, Amar Chavta Kadam. So the Gemara says, because consider what we were talking about in the beginning of Shir today. In the beginning of today's daf, we talked about shechting with a burning hot knife. And we said that the cutting act is preceding the burning act. And so therefore, when you're cutting with a hot knife, so first it's the blade, then it's the heat. So therefore, the Gemara is saying it's the same thing over here. When you're getting hit with a hot poker, so first it's the heat. First it's the force, then afterwards it's the heat. The Gemara says it's not comparable. Chidut Shani. And with two words, the Gemara just simply dismisses the comparison and says it's not comparable. And mistabrin, it makes a lot of sense. When I'm cutting with a hot knife, so how much surface area is actually coming into contact? So we're looking at the edge of the blade. It's very small. So there I can make a very strong argument that the reason why the heat is secondary over there is because you're not talking about a lot of surface area. You're talking about a very sharp, thin blade. And it's just the edge of the blade that we're talking about. So therefore, as it's cutting through, I can easily see the metal knife making its way through before the heat is burning, the heat is doing any kind of act of burning. If, however, it's a metal rod, where when you get hit with it, so it's a lot of surface area that you're getting hit with, so over there I can make the argument that maybe no. Maybe over there, maybe because you came into contact with so much surface area, I first look at the burn, and then only afterwards do we look at the blunt force that's created with the metal. So to which the Gemara says, I don't see it being comparable. Tashma li ben shmud vehikebo nido mishum makasesh. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but I will quote another Braisa. The Braisa actually talks about a poker that got heated up, a person gets hit with it, and how do we judge it? Is it now Shechin or is it Mechva? And the Braisa over here says very, very clearly, it is judged under the category of Mechva Seish. It's a burn. So over here, it sounds like from this Braisa we have a very clear ruling. To which the Gemara says, not necessarily, I'm sorry, Amachav to Kadim. So the Gemara says, so you see that first it's the blunt force, then it's the burn, because remember, in terms of how it's judged, it's always going to be the second one, which is going to be defining it. To which the Gemara says, no, once again, not necessarily. The Gemara says, it not necessarily that you got hit with the metal rod, maybe got poked with the metal rod. Maybe it was only the tip of the metal rod that hit the individual, and so therefore it's the same thing like the knife, and under those circumstances I could therefore make the argument that it's the burning that comes secondary and not the force. Masha Enkin, if I'm hitting it with the side of a metal rod, so then maybe we can make the argument that first it's the burn, because there's so much surface area that comes into contact with the skin, so that first it's a burn, and then afterwards it's a blunt force, and so therefore maybe it falls under the shechin and under mechva. So after all said and done, an entire amud of Gemara, so basically it's not clear, even though we have absolute clarity regarding the knife, as the knife is making its way through, that first we see the blade going through, and then only afterwards there's burning, but that doesn't necessarily translate to being hit with a metal rod.
How do we know that Saras can come from blood trauma? It's a spiritual disease that I thought occurs spontaneously.
There are various things that precipitate the tzaras, meaning, you're right, the tzaras itself, the actual tzaras itself is coming, it's a spiritual illness, but in terms of what precipitates it, and figuring out what category it falls under, so there are various symptoms and precursors that occur in order to get to that particular category. Look, in other words, all of it is a more spiritual illness, but at the same time, though, the things that precipitate it are physical. And so, and there's just a good body of information to know in terms of just knowing which category everything falls under. Okay, with all that stated now, that takes us to the first half of today's daf, and quite frankly, that's the more abstract, esoteric part of today's daf, as it dealt mostly with Saras, a little bit of Hilchos Shechita in the first halacha mentioned today's daf, and that is cutting with a hot knife, shechting with a hot knife. But now with that in mind, we now continue in the Gemara, we are on the bottom of Ches Amud Aleph at the two dots. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abba Ravua, Sakin Shal Avodas Kochavim, Mutar Lishchov Ba. So let's say the knife was used for idolatrous practice. So the knife now is what falls under the category of Tashmishi Avodah Zarah. It was servicing idolatry. What do we know regarding anything that services idolatry? So it's also about now you can't get benefit from it. Interesting, where the Gemara now quotes in the name of Rav Nachman that if you have a sakasha of Avodas Kochavim, you can shech with it. However, also lachtoch ba'basa, but you can't cut meat with it. So, and it demands an explanation, but the Gemara right away explains. Because consider, I cannot get hana from something, but hana has a very clear definition and a parameter. Hana means that it has to have increased value. If I do something which is asur b'hana and it increases the value, so then that is a violation of the isur hana. However, if when using the isur hana, it creates decreased value, so then I'm not violating the isur hana. Really fascinating. I have an animal and I shech the animal. You think to yourself, of course that's going to create a benefit. That's true, but in the scale, in the full scale of what is occurring now, there's a benefit and there's a loss. And the Gemara is basically saying that there needs to be an analysis that's done, a cost analysis. Meaning, yes, it's true, now we get to eat the animal. On the other hand, no more milk, no more eggs. I know that's by foul, but no more milk, no more, can't work for me anymore. So in other words, it is a one-time benefit, but on the other hand, all the loss of the work and the milk that comes out of it, all lost. And it doesn't even have to be female. I mean, it could be male, and I still could say that it's overall a loss. It's a loss in the P&L column, because once again, we are now going to eat it, but that's it. We are done. So overall, it is considered a loss. And so therefore, I'm not violating the Isra Hana when using a stock and shell of Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, if I'm just cutting meat with it, so over here, the big piece of meat right now is not going to help me. Cutting it into servable portions, obviously, that is a benefit. And that is an overall positive benefit. And so therefore, under those circumstances, it would be a violation of the Isra Hana. It works in the opposite direction, the Gemara goes on to point out. Meaning you have to look at it by a case-by-case scenario in terms of doing a cost analysis and seeing whether it's a P or whether it's an L. The Gemara says, consider. So, let's consider. Let's say the animal's misukenis. The animal's about to die. Now, this is something that's going to come up a number of times throughout our Masechta. In other words, and let's not confuse this with a treifa. A treifa is an animal that has a better word to describe treifa than blemish is that there's a cut, there's a serration, there's a hole. There's something physically missing within one of the internal organs of the animal that render the animal a treifa. Under those circumstances, the animal is a treifa. We're not allowed to eat the animal. Misukenis, very simple. Old age. In other words, there's just, it's simply like everything has a point of expiration and the animal's expiring. Just because that's what happens to human life. That's what happens to life. Life comes to a point of expiration. And Mr. Kenneth, the animal's about to die. There is no harm at this point in time shechting the animal and eating the animal. In fact, not only, we could say better, not only is there no harm, on the P&L, on our P&L column, so right now there's much more profit than there is loss. Meaning if the animal dies without the shechita, so now it's a total ruin, it's a total loss. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if we shecht it now, so at least we get to eat it. Because it's a misukenis, it's no longer going to work for us, it's no longer going to provide for us, so over here, shechting it is going to be a profit, not a loss. Under those circumstances, says Rava, by all means, shechting now would be a positive net result, and so therefore you can't do it with the sakin shel shechita. On the other hand, just give me a second. On the other hand, mechatech mutter. I'm sorry, mechatech mutter ba'at me dekaimen lekorbana. So the Gemara says, and I could also make the argument that sometimes cutting the meat into smaller pieces, that would be a detriment. That would be a loss. Why? How could that be? Well, let's say, for example, I have a nice cut of meat that I'm looking to present to somebody as a gift. And now what happens is I just simply cut it up into chopped meat. So now, who's going to see how impressive it is now that's basically been reduced to chopped meat? Right? You go to the market, you get chopped meat. Okay, you don't know what it was, and you don't know what pieces were cut into it. So over here, it could definitely be viewed as a loss. So therefore, what the Gemara basically saying is that a sakin shel shechita, if what is resulting is a net loss, so then mutter, you could use it. If it's something which is a net gain, so then asr. Because again, it comes down to the isr or no. Yeah, Danny.
I was going to say by korbanos, you can't use it because it's definitely giving you a benefit. You're using it for a korban.
Okay. I mean, but you're okay. I do hear you, but you're setting a value to the korban.
Right.
Meaning, okay. I hear your point. It's a little bit tricky. I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to put a value on that. But okay, I definitely hear your point. Continuing in the Gemara, so basically now, when we're talking about a sukkah that was used for avodah zarah purposes, so we've been really we really have had blinders on so far, because we've been only discussing it from the isser hanah standpoint, meaning we asked a question. We know we're not allowed to get benefit from it, but now we gave a really interesting definition of what benefit is. In other words, there is a profit and loss, and we have to look at the net gain or the net loss. And as long as there is a net gain, prohibited. If it's a net loss, permissible. But basically, we've been working with blinders on, because we also have to take into consideration, if this knife has been used previously for avodah zarah, what does that mean? It means that this knife was taken and used to shecht an animal for idolatry. Now, most probably, the animal that was shechted previously with this knife either was not a kosher animal, or, in other words, it wasn't a proper shechita. And so basically, this knife has been used previously for non-kosher. So in other words, embedded in the knife, you have non-kosher. So I understand we've been discussing it from the isser hanah standpoint, but now let's take the blinders off, and now let's look at the other aspect of this question, which is, what about any embedded taste that's in the knife? And the Gemara asks exactly that question. So isn't there residue on the knife which is prohibited, and wouldn't that create a problem? And over here, now let's take a moment to just pause in the middle of the Gemara and just explain this even a little bit better. We're going to be speaking now for the rest of today's daf, and tomorrow as well, but for the rest of today's daf, about transferring taste from an animal to a knife, from a knife to an animal. And so let's make sure that we understand all this really good. Whenever we're talking about transferring a taste from one item to another item, so transfer of taste has to happen with a medium. And that medium has to be heat. In other words, without heat, there is simply not going to be a transfer of taste. You take two items that are cold and they touch one another. Okay, so in other words, so yes, sometimes it's going to require good cleaning, a good external cleaning, but there was no transfer of taste. There was no infusion from one item to another because you don't have the medium of heat. Mm-hmm. So in other words, for taste to get transferred from one item to another, there has to be a medium of heat or some heat substitute. Later in the Masechta, we'll talk about how salting, which creates an exothermic reaction, is going to be similar to that of heat. We're going to talk about how soaking for lengthy periods of time also may be a substitute for heat. But in other words, but the starting point for our entire discussion is that there has to be a heat medium. Okay. Now, when I'm cutting with a knife, when I'm shechting with a knife, so there are two possible heat sources, but I say possible, as you will see, the Gemara will entertain both of them as possibilities, not absolutes. One possibility is as follows, and that is body temperature. Body temperature. Okay, so all of us, right, again, I speak about life in general, and also for all of us organisms, so we all have an internal body temperature that is, let's not say hot, but it's certainly on the warm side. So in other words, then all of us maintain a certain body temperature whenever I'm shechting. So obviously what we're doing is that we're going right into the body of the animal. We're going into the neck of the animal. And so basically we're getting exposure to some heat. Is that going to be a good enough heat substitute in which there's going to be transfer of taste? So we're going to see. The Gemara is going to entertain that discussion in the course of today's daf. Two, a second possible medium of heat is friction. What happens is that when I take the knife and I go back and forth, so I'm creating friction with that knife. Friction is going to create heat. So another possible heat source that may, in fact, transfer taste is going to be the friction that's created from the knife when I'm going back and forth. So really the truth of the matter is that when I'm shechting, there may be, but I'm being very careful in the way I'm presenting it, there may be two possible sources of heat that would transfer the taste. One, the body temperature of the animal, and two, is going to be the friction created by the knife. And then consider that whenever you're shechting, there really are both components at work over here. Okay. With all that stated, I know that was a good way to look at it outside. Now let's see inside the Gemara, where the Gemara is now wondering. So I'm basically taking a knife that I used previously to shecht non-kosher animals, and so I have shamnunis. I have literally the fat of those animals still resting on the knife, and then I go ahead and I shecht a kosher animal with that knife. So again, the Isser Hana issue, that's the P&L talk that we had a moment ago. Good. Net gain, usser. Net loss, mutter. Wonderful. But now let's just talk about it from the standpoint of isser v'heter, meaning what about the actual fat that resides on the knife? And it says the Gemara v'tepekle mishum shamnunis the isura. Continues the Gemara now as we turn to the top of the Amud Beis. So b'chadasha. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we just avoid the question altogether by suggesting that maybe this knife has never been used, and it's a brand new knife? To which the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, okay, so it's a brand new knife. Wait. So if it's a brand new knife, so then how do we even enter the problem to begin with? So now we're falling under what's known as the category as accessories to Avodah Zarah. Now, as Rashi points out over here, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva debate back in Avodah Zarah regarding the Avodah Zarah itself. The Avodah Zarah itself, if I make a little idol, so does it have a Avodah Zarah status when it was made and fashioned and set aside as a Avodah Zarah only when it's worshipped? And that's wonderful, and that's a debate over there in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. But everyone's in agreement that when it comes to accessories to Avodah Zarah, it only gains status of Avodah Zarah only at usage. And so therefore over here, if we're talking about a brand new knife that's never been used before, so what discussion are we even having? So the Gemara says, "Yibaisema the pasuk beGavza laavodas kochavim v'yibaisema biyishana shalav nabaor." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but I tell you what, it's not that's not going to stop the whole discussion from occurring." One says the Gemara, maybe that it was used for avodah zarah, but in other words, previously what the knife was used for was for chopping wood. In other words, we needed wood for the fire on the mizbeach of the avodah zarah, and so therefore it was used. It just wasn't used for an animal previously; it was used for wood. So in other words, that's how we can have an Avodah Zarah discussion of Isser Hana'a, but at the same time not be worried about Shamnun Shel Isser because it hasn't been used previously for a non-kosher animal. Two, says the Gemara, maybe it was used previously for a non-kosher animal. And what? And Libun. And what we did is that we took a blowtorch, we took it to the knife, and whatever non-kosher taste was embedded in the knife was expunged, or I should say even better, was burned through the act of Libun. Good. From our Gemara, it sounds like that if I have a knife that was used previously for non-kosher shechita, so what I need to do in order to expunge the taste is going to be libun. What about hagala? What about just simply putting it into a boiling pot of water? So I'm not going to go through it right now, but for more on this topic, go turn back the page to the Amud Aleph and see the bottom tosis on this topic of whether or not, when the Gemara says libun, it means libun and only libun, or maybe Haggadah would be good enough in of itself. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. Itmar. Ashochi b'sakin shal avdei kochavim. Let's say you shecht with a knife that was used previously by a non-Jew. Now over here, as Rashi points out over here, Not yet. So if I shecht with a knife that was used previously by a non-Jew, so that means to say now that the knife has got some residue, non-kosher taste on it. So now when I shecht with such a knife, so let's start off with the following. The animal is not going to be prohibited. There is no way, shape, or form that the taste, whatever taste exists on the surface area of the knife, is going to make its way through the entirety of the animal. That's a given. That's the starting point for the whole discussion. However, the base of shechita. In other words, on the surface area where I cut on the animal, meaning at the neck of the animal, so there now has been ace, maybe, what the Gemara is entertaining now, some transfer of taste from the knife into the base hashchita, into the area of the neck. Meaning the area of the neck, obviously you have the esophagus and the trachea, but you also have muscles around that area as well. And so you may want to eat from the muscle of that area, but at the same time, however, I shechted it with a knife that has shamnuna shel iser. It's got fat of iser on it. So what do we do under those circumstances? And so the Gemara now brings a debate amongst the Amoraim. Rav Amar Kolef, Rabba Babrachan Amar Mediach. So the Gemara over here has two opinions in terms of what we should be doing with that area of the Beis HaShechita. So according to the opinion of Rav, Kolef, which is you take the thinnest layer possible off from the area in which you shecht. So in other words, that area in which you cut for the purposes of Shechita, again, let everyone understand, the Shechita itself was absolutely good. The animal now is perfectly kosher. With the only question now coming onto the base of Shechita, onto the area in which was shechted, with this non-kosher knife. So now, was there any transfer whatsoever from the knife into the base of Shechita? Rav says yes, but only the thinnest layer. So in other words, if you want to eat from that particular area, you will simply slice off the thinnest layer from where the shechita actually occurred, and the rest of the animal is totally permissible. And Rav Abba Chana says that's not even necessary. Meidiach. In other words, you want to eat that area, that's fine. What you're going to do is you're just going to simply rinse off that area well, because if there was any trace of fat on the knife, so maybe it now is on the area of the Beis HaShechita, so just rinse it off and you should be good. Now, over here, basically the question that is under discussion is, was there any transfer of taste from the knife into the Beis HaShechita? Rav says yes, albeit minimal, but Rav says yes. And Rav Abba Bar Chana says, no, there was no transfer of taste. And what's that issue over here? Lema ba kamiflagi. And now, like I introduced a little bit earlier, now you're going to see both of the variables coming into play. So, a really interesting debate in the Gemara in terms of the Beis HaShechita, is it cold or is it hot? Now, it's a funny question, is it cold or is it hot? Do you know what it is? It is what it is. Meaning, it is the body temperature of an animal. So, what does the Gemara mean when we're debating whether it's cold or whether it's hot? And obviously, what the Gemara is asking over here is, we know what the temperature is. The question is, it's not obviously cooking hot. In other words, it's not 200 degrees. It is, and you'll forgive me, I happen not to know right now currently what the internal temperature of a bovine animal is. But in other words, it's somewhere in the ballpark of 98 degrees. And so, basically, what's at the crux of the Gemara over here is that enough heat to create any kind of transfer? So when the Gemara is arguing over here, whether it's Rosech or whether it's Sonein, all the Gemara is basically asking is this enough heat to generate any kind of transfer whatsoever? And so the Gemara is suggesting is that maybe that, in fact, is the debate over here. The Gemara says not
necessarily... Okay,
fine, but you're working backwards, meaning you're working with what we know as the Atzolot's Bow, and then we're working back over here. Over here, the Gemara is working the other direction, meaning we know what the internal temperature is, and then the Gemara is now asking, is that going to be enough heat? And again, we're just talking, even if we're saying it is enough heat, it's just to create a minimal amount of transfer.
Also, you can say maybe the friction of a knife.
Okay, good.
The heat, no?
Good. So, my sefer beis hashchita roseach, lo. The kulei ama beis hashchita roseach, who? So the Gemara says, no, you know what? Let's even argue that the beis hashchita is in fact roseach. In other words, it is hot enough. That kind of heat is enough to transfer. However, man de amar kolev shapir, man de amar tri de mediach, adi de tri de simanim lafukidam, lo bli. So the Gemara has an interesting svara. On one hand, to say that you have to do klipa, you have to take off just the thinnest layer on the base of shechita is because of the heat that created a minimal amount of transfer. On the other hand, if you say just hadacha by itself and you do not require klipa, it's based on the fact that, yes, it's true. The base of shechita is hot, and it does create a minimum transfer, but not here. Why not? Because there's a counter force. Mm-hmm. Meaning, on one hand, there is shamnunis trying to make its way from the knife into the base of shechita. On the other side, the base of shechita now is squirting blood in the direction of the knife. And so basically, the way the Gemara is looking at it right now, again, all this is a possibility. is that basically it's a standoff. Mm. It's a push. Mm. The knife is, on one hand, sending the shamnunis in the direction of the Beis HaShechita, but the Beis HaShechita is also sending blood in the direction of the knife. Push. And because of a push, no transfer. You want to eat the Beis HaShechita? Okay, rinse off the area. But in other words, but there's no bliya. That's one possibility. Igad Amr the Gemara goes over Dikuleyama Beis HaShechita Tzonim. Maybe the fact remains is that the Beis HaShechita is considered cold. And Mandamar Mediach Shapir. Now, if all you need now is a rinse, perfectly understandable. In other words, there was no transfer. And maybe some of the fat externally is on the Beis HaShechita, so rinse it off. But Mandamar Kolef, and the one who says that you are going to not just rinse, but you're going to have to take off a layer of the Beis HaShechita, Agav Duchad Sakina Bala. Well, there we have the friction of the knife. The friction of the knife, even though in the absence of cold, the friction of the knife can create just the smallest transfer of taste, so that taste now goes a Kedei Klipa's worth into the Beis HaShechita. Really interesting, what comes out now from the Gemara is that the Gemara now is equivocating as to whether or not the Beis HaShechita creates any transfer. In other words, is that enough heat to generate in order to create any transfer? And two, whether the pressure of the knife also is able to generate any kind of heat in which there's going to be a transfer. Stay tuned, we'll discuss a little bit in just a moment. No, I'm sorry. Discuss it right now. Rashi writes over here, Duchad Desakin. Rashi says, Shemeshav Shefo Bebasa Bedochek, So Bala Vekevin Delo Ifse Kilchasa. Now, the Gemara over here does not come to a conclusion. Visuadar Raisa, and Rashi writes that we're talking about Nisadar Raisa over here. Avinu Lechumra. So therefore, we should be stringent. Dekaimalam Bishal Tara, Halachacha Machmer. So, in other words, this is an Issa Torah, so therefore we should be Machmer. And Rashi also points out as well that keep in mind, not the best practice to begin with. Meaning, if you have a knife that was not koshered and was used previously for non-kosher, and now to shech with such a knife, it's not lechatchila, it's not prudent to do that. In other words, only so that afterwards you're going to have to take off a kedei klipa. So lechatchila you shouldn't be shechting with a knife altogether. And if you do shech with a knife, says Rashi, so you should do a klipa. Not that the Gemara concluded that way, but the Gemara raised both possibilities. It is a suffik daraisa. Therefore, says Rashi, we should be machmer.
Isn't it chazaka that the knife was actually a good knife because it was used before?
Well, we're talking about a knife that was used previously for treif. In general, you're asking in general.
With that particular knife that was used for, is there a chazaka that it was actually a good knife for shechita, like a kosher knife for shechita?
No, you have to check it. You have to check it for shechita.
So he checked it, but didn't bother wiping up all the.
That's basically what the Gemara is entertaining. Okay, sakin treifa. We have a knife that was used previously that shechted a treifa. Now here, the animal is kosher. And the shechita, for the most part, was good, except for one small detail. The animal itself was a treifa. And as such, so as much as we shechted the animal, so we can't eat the animal because the animal is a treifa. And so now, here comes our next step in today's discussion. And that is the knife itself. What kind of koshering, if any, do we need to do to the knife now that the knife was used to shech the treifa? Now, obviously, just make some basic points over here. Obviously, we're not going to know this until later on, meaning that only upon an internal examination of the animal are we going to know that the animal was a treifa, so we may not learn this until later on. Additional to that is that generally, and we'll talk about this in tomorrow's daf, we don't assume an animal's a treifa. We do check the lungs. Again, all this will come up a lot of it in tomorrow's daf. But okay. But right now, we're just dealing with, if I sheft an animal that was a treifa, what, if any, prohibited taste or flavor went into the knife? So, second treifa, pligi bar ravachav ravina, charamar b'chamim v'charamar b'tzonin, v'chasafil b'tzonin. So the Gemara says, well, there's a debate amongst the Amoraim whether or not I need to kosher it with hot water, or just simply rinse the knife with cold water, and that would be good. And then the Gemara over here comes to a very definitive conclusion, and that is cold water would be sufficient. V'iik abalisa deporsa lemechbe lo tzarech. And if you have a rag, a nice strong rag, so the Gemara says just wipe it down with a rag. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. There is an opinion, although we just concluded that that's not the accepted opinion, but there is an opinion that when I shechted a treifa animal, so what I need to do now with the knife is I need to kasher the knife. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Do you know that every single time you're shechting an animal, how does the animal start off? Animal starts off as a davar aser. It's something which is prohibited. Right now in the animal, in its live state, I can't eat it. Sefer Menachai. And only after the shechita is concluded, now is the animal mutter. We're changing the status from being aser to mutter. That's basic. We all know that. But basically what the Gemara wonders is as follows. So as I am now making my way through the neck of the animal with the knife, so as we're cutting through, Avram and Achai. And only at the end of the Shechita, then and only then, is it something which is mutter. So if I now made the argument that when I shechted a treifa animal, so the knife needed kashering. Now again, it's not the halacha. We don't paskin that way. But there's a legitimate opinion that says that it requires kashering. So then wouldn't that be the case every time I shecht an animal, that basically that knife is going to require kashering? Because as it's making its way through, it's coming into contact with Isser, only at the end of the Shechita now it's Mutter? What a wonderful question. But the Gemara gives an answer. So the Gemara says, Emas bala l'chi chayma, emaka chayma l'chi gamar Shechita, ha'ishayta hetei rahava. So the Gemara says that, yes, it's true. The question would have been good, but we have to take the following factors into consideration. When, if there's going to be any transfer of taste from the animal into the knife, as you're doing the act of Shechita, when would that happen? It wouldn't happen in the beginning, because there's not enough heat generated. Now, it's not clear from the Gemara what the heat source is, because now, as we know, as we went through today's daf, there really are two candidates in terms of what the heat source is. One candidate is the body temperature of the animal, and the second one is the friction of the knife. It's not clear exactly which one the Gemara is focusing on right now.
Or maybe both.
Right? C is definitely a possibility. Could be both. So it's not clear which one the Gemara is focusing on right now, but what is clear, however, is that even if I'm going to make that argument, it's only coming at the end of the act of Shechita. At the beginning of the incision, I have neither. Neither enough heat of the animal or heat of the friction to generate a taste. Only at the end, and when you get the end, you know what you have? You have a kosher animal. So in general, when it comes to Avram and Achai, it's not going to be a consideration, because at the beginning of the incision, and even halfway through, it's not going to create enough heat until you get to the end, and there was no transfer. Masha Ein Kein, when it comes to a treifa animal, when you get to the end, you know what you have? You have a treifa animal. In terms of the difference between nevela and treifa,
after you cut, it becomes a nevela, no?
So if you gave it a good shechita, it does not become a nevela. We're going to talk later in the Masechta about whether or not the shechita of a treifa is going to remove the nevela status. That's coming up later in the Masechta.
What if when you're cutting, you don't know that it's a treifa?
Okay.
So after at the end, you know that.
Come to me after. We'll talk about it after. Okay. We did this. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. Atabach Sarach Shlosha Sakinim. Your standard shochet needs three knives. Achash shochet ba want to shech, v'achash mechatech ba basar want to cut meat, v'achash mechatech ba chalav and want to cut the forbidden fats of the animal. So these are three separate knives that are necessary. So why three separate knives? So let's go one by one. So first of all, the knife for shechita. That has to be its own separate knife. And for obvious reasons, says Rashi. Because what would happen if I took the knife that I shechted with and afterwards I started chopping meat with that knife? So what can happen very easily is that there can end up becoming a nick on the knife if I use it now for just quote-unquote mundane cutting. It's not mundane. In other words, obviously I want to cut the animal up. But what can end up happening easily is that I'm going to hit a bone, I'm going to create a nick in the knife, and no good. So therefore, when I am using the knife for shechita, keep that exclusive to shechita in order to try to the best of our ability is for that knife to remain nick-free. We're going to talk later, and it comes up tomorrow. We're going to talk about the checking of the knife and the making sure that there's no nick in the knife and wonderful. That's all coming up. But in other words, just from a practical standpoint, keep that knife exclusive to Shechita so it maintains a nick-free status. Two, second knife you're going to be using for cutting meat, and the third knife you're going to be using for cutting chalev. Now, cutting chalev, now we're not allowed to eat chalev, but on the market, it's a commodity. People want chalev. Chalev is the forbidden fats of the animal, but forbidden only for consumption. You can get benefit from chalev. So, right, it's soap. And well, It's so funny. There is a serious discussion in the halacha of whether or not chalef can be used for soap, because when you rub it on your skin is absorbing it, it's a real discussion in terms of whether that could be used. Let's, for our purposes right now, keeping it nice and simple, right? Illumination,
so
that right?
Might be the dishwasher things.
Yeah.
We are accepting that.
Yeah, it's a real discussion.
If you're accepting by putting OU.
Okay, it's something that's real.
I was wondering why.
Anyway, but illumination. So chalev is a commodity. The problem, of course, is if I take my knife and I cut chalev with it, and then I cut meat with it, so the chalev residue that's on the knife is now going to go onto the meat. So that's no good. So therefore, knife number two is for the meat. Knife number three is for the chalev. To which the Gemara wonders, what's the big deal? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I skipped a little bit, sorry. So the Gemara says, okay, but look, the Shechita knife, great, keep that separate. There's no argument over there. But the Gemara tries to give a little bit of an argument, why not use one knife for meat and chalev? First cut the meat and then cut the chalev. And that way, no transfer from the chalev to the meat. Now, granted, of course, by the way, even in this consideration of the Gemara, there still is going to be an issue of you're going to have to kasher the chalev knife afterwards. But kashering over here, keep in mind. In other words, I cut the chalev when it was cold. So kashering over here is wipe down the knife. Okay, there is something about sticking the knife into the earth 10 times. You may have heard of that. We learned that together back in Avodah Zarah. There's a Tosfos that discusses that over here as well. Okay, but right now, just for our purposes, just wipe down the knife and that's good. So the Gemara says, "Zerush amiyachto chalavim v'acharkach basar." So the Gemara says, so the concern is that, well, no, because if I have one knife and I have to make sure that the order is first meat and then chalev, the gzera is that maybe I may cut chalev and then meat. So the Gemara says, "Hashanami mechlofle." The Gemara says, okay, but even if I have two knives, shouldn't we have the similar concern about switching around the knives? The Gemara says, not necessarily. By virtue of the fact that we need two knives, so now, why do I have two knives? Obviously because the two knives are for two different cutting events. And so therefore the knives are going to get labeled, and it's much more of a hecker and much less of a chance of me confusing the two knives. So the Gemara says, and also, when washing the meat and when washing the chalev, so you should have two buckets. One for the washing of the meat and the other one for the washing of the chalev. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara asks a similar question, why not one bucket of water, first wash all the meat and then afterwards wash the chalev? To which the Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says, no, I don't want to do that because, again, I may confuse and first wash the chalev and then wash the meat. And as Rashi points out over here, if I wash the chalev, that means there's going to be residue chalev in that water, and then when I wash the meat, so that residue chalev is now going to attach itself to the meat. Now, granted, of course, again, by the meat, it was cold, so just simply rinse it off, but I may forget to do so. So the Gemara says, Hashanami michlaf lei, kevin tzushchina tarte islu ekeira. And the Gemara says, once again, if there are two, shouldn't we be concerned that I'm going to wash the chalev in the other bucket? The Gemara says, again, same argument. Once there are two buckets that are required, so it's much more of a hecker, and people are going to understand that the two buckets are representative of two different washings that we need to do, and it'll be easier for us to keep everything more in line and more straightforward. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up in the bottom of the Amud.